coming to you live from inside of a library. I'm Johannes Stauffer, and with me, as always, is the magic of reading. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 1234, Sensei Doug and his magical karate friends.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm still Tom Rich, even after he said that.
It didn't change.
No, it's the same. Remains constant and consistent. We're glad to have you here. Welcome. Glad that you're here listening to us on the internet, dear readers.
And now he's Will Wheaton, and he's Tom Rich again. It does change.
Wow. I didn't realize.
You were just briefly, you were Will Wheaton.
Where?
Will Wheaton.
Who am I now?
You're Tom Rich again.
Oh, okay. Like,
In fits and starts, occasionally you're...
Well, wait. If I was Will Wheaton, then where was Tom Rich? And what did Will Wheaton come here, or...
No, you were Will Wheaton.
But then where was Tom Rich?
There was no Tom Rich. Unless someone else became Tom Rich briefly at the same time.
So it's just like this weird...
You ceased to be.
It's spoopy. Very
three spoopy. Spoopy, five me.
So what do we got on the show tonight, Giannis? Who's our guest this evening?
I've got like half a jar of mayo.
You were supposed to book a full jar of mayo.
Sorry, I dropped the ball.
You guys reading out there on the internet couldn't see it, but as he took that deep breath there, his neck inflated like a bullfrog.
We could scrape this half a jar of mayo into a smaller jar, and then that jar would be full.
Would it, though?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's how volume works.
I don't think it's how jars work, though.
Really? How do you think jars work?
Well, I'm pretty sure that they are, you know, when you've got such as a very narrow pancake with perhaps fruits on it and also butters and cheese and maybe sugar, I think that's how jars work.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I tried.
Not that hard.
I tried a little bit.
You just really, really weakly grasped at another old running gag.
It's
maybe no longer running. It has stalled.
The mechanic
couldn't fix it.
It's a
broken down gag.
I was going to go more with like a walking gag or a crawling gag. Maybe a rolling gag.
Kinky?
Probably. Tonight on the show, we got a review for you of a game that's a little bit old, but also a little bit different, and also it's a game we played recently, so I'm going to talk about it. We're talking about Dungeon Fighter today, the 2011 game by designers Aureliano Buonfino, Lorenzo Silvo, and Lorenzo Tucci Sorrentino.
Are they Dutch?
I think they're Italian.
They sound Dutch.
I don't think that's maybe. I don't know enough about Europe to tell you.
Okay.
It was put out by Fantasy Flight, as I said, in 2011, and it's a game we played. Our friend Devin Valterkreuf, is that his name?
Yeah, you're also still talking into the wrong part of the microphone.
He had us play it. He was wondering if he should keep it or if he should sell it on the internet, and we're going to tell you what we decided after we played it.
I didn't know that was a question in his mind.
Sure.
Was it actually?
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably.
You're... Why do I talk to you?
Well, because nobody else will willingly interact with you.
That's fair, yeah.
Because you say hurtful and unkind things more or less like other people spit.
Do other people spit a lot?
Yeah. And constantly.
I didn't know that.
There's spittoons outside every cube at my work.
Wow.
Just spitting.
You work at a spit factory.
I don't see how that's relevant.
I'm just saying that's not, like, the sample size and location
is not
necessarily indicative of the rest of the world.
What else are you going to do with saliva if you don't spit? I don't understand how people could be not spitting constantly. Where is it going to go?
That is a good question.
Yeah, you'll drown if you don't get rid of it somehow.
Maybe that's okay.
You all right there, buddy? Do you need to talk?
I meant you drowning.
Oh. See,
I mean, I could drown too. That would be fine, but I haven't had that problem.
We're back to the aforementioned hurtful remarks.
Yeah, that's what I was shooting for.
That's why you're so alone.
I could start spitting on you instead of being mean. Would that be okay? Would be better?
Well, it depends on how hot of a day it is.
And how hot the spit is, I guess.
Does your spit come out warm?
Does yours not?
No, mine comes out ice cold. It's tiny ice cubes. It's how I chill my lemonade in the summer.
That's amazing.
You know, it's a gift. I'm a giver. Dungeon Fighter.
Yep.
Right. So Dungeon Fighter is a game where you put a big cardboard target in the middle of your table. You set up some cards to represent different levels and rooms of a dungeon. You give everybody a hero with some special powers. And then in order to use those special powers and fight monsters as you move through the dungeon, you have to throw the dice onto the target like you're curling. You're playing curling. You're curling, more or less. The dice have to bounce off the table and onto the target. Depending on how close to the center they land, they do more damage. And depending on the color of the die, it might activate one of your special powers and let you do all sorts of goofy things. One player throws at a time, you pass the dice from player to player, and try to fight your way to the end and kill the boss. And then you've won, if you kill him. And if you don't, if you all died, you've lost. Is that a fair summary of Dungeon Fighter?
I'm hung up on your curling analogy, which I don't think is really very accurate, but yeah, otherwise.
Okay, so maybe you're not curling so much as you're hurl batting?
Like, what's the curling the stone called?
It's just called the stone. It's just a stone.
They don't have another silly name for it.
No, it's just stoning.
Like, if it were to tumble end over end, and the way in which it landed mattered, and those things, I guess, then it could be kind of like, I see what you're shooting for, but I don't feel like as a descriptor for someone who hasn't played the game that it was helpful.
Fine.
You're rolling dice. They have to hit the table first, and then they have to land somewhere on the target.
Yep. And if you miss, bad things happen to you. The monsters knife you in the butt.
Only ever in the butt. They're weird. Well, let's talk about the game.
Yeah. So there are effects that will cause you to have to roll the dice in various stunty ways. Like I had one where I had to jump into the air and roll while my feet were off the ground. There are ones where you have to hitch your leg up and throw under your leg, or not flick the dice off the back of your non-dominant hand. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
You can get items that do stuff and absorb it, all sorts of general fantasy things like that. So I guess the first question with Dungeon Fighter is the central mechanic of trying to land a die on the target fun enough to carry the game? Because really the rest of it, like absent that mechanic, is a pretty standard dungeon crawler, I would say, right?
Yep.
Like if that mechanic doesn't work, there's no point.
Yeah.
So what do you think? What was your reaction to the central conceit of the game?
I mostly enjoyed the central conceit of the game because I like a dungeon crawl, and I was surprised pleasantly to find that it was a cooperative game. We were working together through the dungeon rather than trying to backstab one another or whatever. So that was fine. I enjoyed it until we finally came across one of the things that forced you to jump or hop or twirl or whatever, and then the game went sharply downhill from there for me. I don't think the game is inherently bad, but I didn't enjoy it for the most part with those particular mechanics included.
So how did you feel about just general flicking the dice onto the target, like the basic throw the dice at the target mechanic? Was it just the stunts that made you not care for it, or
the stunts really made me not care for it? The flicking of the dice was fine. I feel like could get I only played it the one time. It might get old, or it might not. Like I guess I could see it getting old for a couple reasons. Either you get it nailed and then it's just okay, I can hit the target all the time, but that could be a problem with any dexterity throwing hit the target game, that, you know, darts, curling, whatever. So I don't think that's going to necessarily wear it out. It could get old if you're not great at it. I didn't do particularly well at it. And you're just always bad at it. But that's sort of a different problem. That's not really inherent in the game. So yeah, I think the central mechanic of throw dice at a target worked okay.
Yeah, I agree that it could outstay its welcome a little bit. But it's an interesting twist on dice in that not only does the face that shows up matter, but also where you land it.
Did you mention the faces of the dice?
I mentioned that depending on how the die roll, which face comes up, you might get to use a special power.
Okay.
That's the only difference between different rolls. Other than that, all that matters is where it lands on the target. And that's kind of a design space that was unexplored in the game, is just more variation on the die on the face that rolls. Because you don't have any control really over the face that comes up. But mm-hmm. you do have a little control over where it lands on the target, depending on how good you are at throwing. So that might have added a little more variety into the different kinds of results you've had if there was more than just special powers that came up. Because as it stands, the die are either blank, it's either a blank side that just does damage, or a special power thing that might activate one of your abilities. That's about it. So that was a place that might have made it more interesting.
Or more frustrating. I think the flip side of that is adding more randomness into the game, depending on what they had other faces potentially do, could make it worse.
That's true. Depending on what they did, that could be. Like, if it was just extra damage, depending on the face, that would be fine.
Yeah.
You know, but if it was, sometimes it's a fumble and you just fail no matter what, that would suck.
Yeah.
The stunts didn't bother me too much, but that was mainly because, for the most part, I got the one stunt I was good at. Like, I was pretty decent at jumping and rolling all at once.
Uh-huh.
I had that down reasonably well, and I just kept doing that, and I tried to avoid doing stunts I couldn't do well.
Uh-huh.
But I agree, some of them are just not fun. Like, the ones where you have to roll it off of your face, those just aren't interesting to me.
And those I didn't mind as much. They were harder.
Mm-hmm.
Because I in particular, but a few other people I noticed had the same problem, like rolling it off your face or rolling it off your elbow. Often the dice would just go straight down
mm-hmm.
and then just bounce straight up into the air again and come right down. So it didn't make it toward the target because it didn't roll.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't allow you to tip your arm in such a way that it was likely to roll. So it was basically just like, this is garbage. You're not going to get anywhere with this, given the rules that are put in place.
Mm-hmm.
But those ones weren't as annoying to me. I feel like what I didn't like about it is the ones that required... So already, you're being separated out against the other players, even though it's cooperative. You're being separated out by how good you are at aiming.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you add more, like, now try to continue trying to aim. You're just throwing, but now you have to, like, jump into the air or turn around and then throw.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, at least... The like, here, put yourself in a situation where all your friends can laugh at you. Like, I don't want to do that. Even if they're laughing with me because they have to do it later, I still don't want to do that.
Yeah.
That's not fun for me.
Yeah.
And so I don't enjoy it. And so for some people it was fine because, you know, they did okay at that, or they just are have greater self-assurance.
Sure.
But for me, and I know for at least a couple other people at the table, it was not the best part of the game.
Well, and the other thing that can throw you off about that is that when you miss a throw in Dungeon Fighter, you're costing the group resources.
Right.
You're costing bonus die that you have a pool of that's shared among everybody. You're costing everybody time. You might be doing damage to your allies eventually as you run out of dice. So there's an element of performance anxiety there too, where, you know, you really want to hit the target because you don't want to let the team down.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with you that there were some stunts or ways of rolling dice that felt like you had less control and more. Those were less interesting to me. Like, if I couldn't at least have some input over where the dice went, I didn't really want to do it. Like, whenever I rolled it off my nose, I'm like, well, this is perfectly random. You know, I don't have any way to impact how this is going to go. Those weren't fun for me.
Yeah.
I didn't mind missing or looking a little foolish. I minded more not being able to play, not feeling like I was playing the game. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess.
It's maybe not much of a difference.
Well, right? Okay, so to just call out a problem I have directly to maybe help people relate a little bit more. The one that was jump in the air. We're playing in someone's house on the second floor. In a stick-built wood house.
Mm-hmm.
When a large person jumps, when they come down and hit the ground again, it makes a sound and perhaps shakes the building around you.
Mm-hmm.
When a small person jumps, it doesn't do that. So whether or not you hit the target when you did it, the fact that you are now up on your feet and have to leap into the air and then deal with whatever the consequence of doing that inside of a building is, was not fun for a couple of the larger ones of us.
That's fair.
And whether or not anyone else was thinking of it, 20, 30 years of that being a thing that you've struggled with in your life, it's in your attention, even if it's not in anyone else's.
We have a reasonably
kind game group, and so it wasn't going to be called out, but now try doing that in a game, in the upstairs of a game store, in their game room, in a 200-year-old building with a wood floor or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to design in such a way that's going to create avenues for mockery.
Sure.
I guess.
That's very fair. Or flip side, if that's the kind of group you're going to run into Dungeon Fighter with, Dungeon Fighter might not be your game. You want to, it's a game that you would need to play in a place that can handle people hopping around and with a group that it won't be a problem. That kind of thing won't be a problem with. Definitely.
And it's a similar, I have a similar problem with, not, I mean, that was just an example. But I have a similar problem with charade style games where it's just like act a thing out. And then if you do it badly and people don't get it, it's not. And if it was badly enough that everyone was like, really, you thought that was clear that that was Bird and you couldn't come up with anything else? And it's like, well, maybe I have a problem. Maybe I don't like acting. Maybe I don't like being in front of people. Maybe sure. I freeze up in front of people and I could have come up with 16 different ways that I could have pantomimed Peregrine Falcon. But but what put me in front of people and I did the one that was Bird and that's all I had. Sorry. And so that's a problem with that type of game in any situation. And it doesn't, again, it doesn't make those games inherently bad, but you have to be aware of who you're playing them with and who can enjoy them and not just be like, no, come on, it's fine. You'll have fun. Maybe they won't. You don't know that.
Sure.
So this was close to charades on some levels in the sort of, is the potential fun of the game even worth the potential humiliation of the game kind of balances.
Yeah, I concur. Dungeon Fighter is less on that spectrum for me.
Sure.
Like, it's pretty far to the left. It's just, oh, you throw the dice and it's a thing.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite in the same spot on the spectrum, but I feel like it's more similar than in most board games.
Sure. So that's kind of the central idea with Dungeon Fighter is throwing the dice, and that's kind of where we're at on that. We're kind of ambivalent about that part. What did you think about the game around that, the exploring the dungeon, the getting items and the gold, and the working your way toward the boss monster? Did that felt pretty generic dungeon crawler to me.
It was generic. I liked it. There wasn't enough of it, and I think it was more generic because there wasn't all that much of it than it was generic because they hadn't put thought into it.
Sure. We should probably note too at this point that we were playing the base game, no expansions.
Okay. I guess it would make sense, but I wasn't aware that there were expansions to have played or not played.
I think there are expansions.
Yeah, I believe you. I'm just saying. I knew nothing about the game. It was set up and I was like, oh, I guess we're playing this now, and then we played it. I'll forgive a dungeon crawler 6 out of 7 times. I like that. I have an active enough imagination that I can engage with that, even if they don't give me all that much to engage with. Mm-hmm. I know other people feel differently, and that's fine. But yeah, so they could have done more with it, and I don't think they needed to do more with it, because really, it just exists as a framework to put their dice-throwing mechanic on top of anyway. It could have been anything.
Mm-hmm. See, I almost felt like there was too much around the dice throwing mechanic that was stretched, and it was pulling the game out longer than it wanted to be.
Uh-huh.
Like all of the bookkeeping with health and monsters and special abilities and whatnot, all of the bookkeeping with moving around the dungeon and making your way through it and getting to the boss and tally it, buying items now and again and all of that. Like all of those are kinds of mechanics I like, but given that I was spending the lion's share of my time and brain power playing with this target game, throwing the dice and whatnot, all of that felt like padding around that. I'm like, I want to get back to throwing the dice and fighting the monsters. And it made the game last long enough that I got sick of it a little bit. I'm like, this needed to be over 15 minutes ago. So I feel like a game like this, where its real draw is in the unusualness of its resolution mechanic, wants to keep the stuff around it as simple and straightforward as it can so that you don't get sick of it, so that you don't wind up tired of throwing the dice at the target. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I felt like the game was longer than it wanted to be, but I didn't feel like it was because of any of the bookkeeping that went on. I felt like the easy tweak was either deal more damage or have the bad guys have less health. Like, the thing that dragged on for me was like, oh, we finally hit the guy, because it was pretty hard to hit a bad guy. We finally hit him, but he still has 15 more health.
Sure.
And that's what really dragged for me.
That might have been just that Gary kept missing the target. No, Gary did fine. I'm just picking on him.
We went around several times. So the deal is, you There's, did you talk about the colored dice? And
I mentioned how they work. I didn't go into a lot of depth.
If you use up your three colored dice, which can correspond to different powers that your players have, then you, if you use up all three of them and the monster is still standing, you either have to start using bonus dice that you may have gotten some way, but that they don't come back, or you have to agree to reset, get your three dice back, but everyone in the party takes damage. And then you can continue throwing dice against whatever bad guy you're fighting in a given room. And the, like, which way should we go? Should we keep throwing? So I felt like the things that dragged were too much health for the monsters and or not dealing enough damage to mm-hmm. the monsters. And then the, like, well, but my green power is good. Save the green one for me, but my green power is good. And discussing that, like,
sure,
who should use it in what order, that's what dragged. And again, this was a first-time playthrough for me, so I know a couple people had played and a couple others hadn't. But that's the stuff that, for me, wasn't as fun. And I feel like if everyone had played the game, it would speed up a fair amount, because you would then know who has what and what different players do and what different characters do and what different weapons sure. do. I don't feel like the balance is too far off from where they intended it to be, whether or not. And the other thing is, you know, if you feel like the game is really dragging, we went through what, three dungeon cards?
Three dungeon cards and a boss.
Make it two and a dot. Make it two and a boss. Like mm-hmm. it's an easy fix. If you get to the end of the second one, and you're like, I'm pretty sick of this. Okay, spend your coins and go to the boss. Then it's not like the third dungeon card is notably different from the first two.
Right. It's just the monsters are tougher.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to make it seem like we're completely dumping on Dungeon Fighter, because there are some cool moments it produces. Like when it comes up to you and you're down to the team is down to the last dice, and you manage to nail a roll with your weapon where you had to jump in the air and throw it, and you land on a 5 damage, manage to kill the monster, and it's a clutch move. That's pretty cool. Like, you feel pretty good when you manage to land something like that, or when somebody else does. That's a good everybody high-fiving around the table type of moment. So it definitely lends itself to that kind of thing. And it's a good co-op in that way. You know, there's a lot of highs to it, I think. You know? Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yep. I found that it was interesting as a co-op in that you still, at least I did, found myself comparing myself to other players a lot more
mm-hmm.
as though it were competitive, even though it wasn't. So whichever one of us was dealing the most damage or most consistently rolling well, I cared a lot more about that in this than I would in Arkham Horror or in Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. They still sort of seemed like, well, you're still kind of winning. You're doing better. And likewise, toward the end of the game, if you get all of your health knocked off, you come back, but you lose one of your powers and what is it, 4 of your health? Or something, like a third of your health at any rate. And there were, I think, one or two people left at the end of the game who had never been knocked out. And even though it's not even brought up in the game, I felt like everyone was kind of looking like, well, I've never been knocked out. You have. And
sure.
There were other people who got, like, at least got knocked out entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And just, that's another thing. It was an interesting failure in player elimination where she got knocked out early enough that she basically just had to sit and watch the last round.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, that's a good, I hadn't thought about the player elimination part.
Yeah.
Yeah. They give you can get knocked out twice and then you're out for good on the third one. And that's a take on it.
Yeah. So the things, I think I could enjoy it if I played it again. I think the problems I had with it, everyone wouldn't have with it. It was mostly just, it was a little too dexterity game for me,
mm-hmm.
like a little too, how good are you at throwing and hitting a target, you know, judging the weight of a die and the surface of the table and
sure
how much you need to give it to get it up over the edge of the board but not fly across the board and off the other side kind of thing. I think it could be enjoyable. The thing I would change, every single roll has to hit the table before it hits the board in order to count.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a generic roll, for a roll with no, like, there's no penalty from the room you're in or the enemy you're fighting, and there's no challenge, like, you have to do this in order to get the extra damage from your weapon.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. So for the base roll, that's fine. But when you're adding, like, spin in the air and then throw, or toss it backwards over your shoulder without looking, or like throw from under the table, At that point, you've made it difficult enough to hit the target that it shouldn't matter if it bounces off the table first.
I could see that.
I felt like that was stupid.
I feel like in any other game, I would say that that kind of exception would be too fiddly, but in this game, I would that would be a fine one to do.
Yeah. And it, really, at the end of the day, I don't think it would even be an exception, because it was an exception in a way to say every roll has to hit the table. The other way to do it is just say base attack has to hit the table. Any other type of attack has to work this different way.
Has to do whatever.
So you're not appending something. You're just saying, no, it's a different thing.
That makes sense. All right, I buy it. And that certainly would add and make life a little bit easier.
Yeah.
On a lot of those rolls.
I think it would be worth a house rule for anyone who plays it regularly and has friends in their group who are not as hand-eye coordinated.
Right.
The one that this was funny to me. One of the challenges was you have to roll using the hand of the player to your left.
Mm-hmm.
I did amazing with that. I had a much harder time than I would ever have expected. Actually rolling and like hitting the friggin' target, everything went wrong every time, except when I rolled with the hand of the player to my left, and then I nailed it every single time.
Yep. I saw it. It happened.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think I would buy Dungeon Fighter or stock it in my own collection, but if somebody busts it out, I'll play. It's solid. It's fun.
Yep.
You'll enjoy yourself.
If someone recommended it or like brought it up at a game, yeah, I'd play it. I wouldn't be like, no, gag. Especially if they were like, we could play this or whatever, Terra Mystica.
Good times. Are we at time? Is that it?
Sure. That's Dungeon Fighter.
That's what we think about Dungeon Fighter.
Where you fight a dungeon.
You have to fight the entire dungeon.
Just fight it.
Just punch that brick wall. With your fist. Punch it.
Fist punch it.
Fistpunching.com. So usually at this point, Johannes would start bringing up our contact info, but right now he's just punching me over and over again in the
quietly.
Liver.
Quietly.
Yeah, just silently striking me about the liver and kidneys with his fists. So we'll be right back after I stop peeing blood.
If you would like an opportunity to punch Tom in the liver and kidneys, you can let us know and we'll definitely work that out for you on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can do such a thing on email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or on the website in the comment section at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow.
Or you can just do a sensuous dance and stop, please. Don't. Just no. Stop. Stop that.
You
don't
told them that. To start.
Stop it. I regret it. It was a bad idea. Stop, please.
Well, we'll be right back when you're finished dancing. The Mildly Alarming podcast is brought to you by Two Men Brand Leopard Cleaner. When your leopard is covered in mud or fungus or just a huge pot of lamb chowder, it takes two men to get his pelt clean and shiny again. Two Men's patented formula penetrates deep into the leopard, removing dirt and grime while leaving the spots untouched. Watch as we apply Two Men to salsa here, working up a rich, creamy lather. And
I'm United States astronaut Vic Chafterly, and I'm here to tell you that you got a neck flap like a turkey bird.
You know what, Vic? You know what? You keep busting in like that and saying hurtful things, and it's really not cool, you know? Your stuff isn't even related to what you're supposed to talk about, and nobody thinks it's cute. We're all working our butts off here, and you just bust in and yell something and think that because you're an astronaut, it's all fine. Well, it's not fine, Vic. It's not fine. It's rude. It's just rude.
I'm United States astronaut Vic Chafterly, and I'm here to tell you that I feel a little bad. Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And we're whispering because there's a Yeti in the room trying to get us to milk it.
Okay, it left. All right. Welcome back. Glad to have you.
Wow.
Good for you to be here reading our podcast. It's just lovely. We're just happy to have you here. Aren't we happy, Johannes?
I would just like to point out that since I've stopped reacting at all to Tom saying readers instead of listeners, he's really ramped up the attempts to get a rise out of me by now really deliberately doing it wrong in ways that just can't be ignored. And I've been ignoring it up to this point still, just kind of watching him be sad. And it's been fun for me.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's generally the case.
Zing. But we can't do this right now. We have a segment to do. We have stuff. We have stuff we've got to talk about, important board game material that we need to discuss.
Things to get did.
Things to get did. What are we doing? What's happening here?
I didn't come up with anything. You want to just do a theme ballin'?
I think we were gonna do a cream squallin'.
That sounds messy.
Well, I mean, it's got a lot of, you know, heavy whipping cream and just squallin' all over the place, so it's gonna get sticky. But delicious.
Yeah, as long as it's not sour cream.
Just a hurricane.
Just a cyclone.
Of sour cream whipping around the place. Just all up in your business.
I think if we opened like a sort of a Tex-Mex restaurant, mm-hmm. if we were reviewed as a hurricane of sour cream, I think I wouldn't be disappointed with that, you know, if the newspaper
That'd be fine.
Food review person.
I guess it depends kind of how they put it. Like if they're like, yeah, like there's more sour cream than you would expect, but in a good way.
Oh, I wouldn't care.
Like that's one thing. But if they're like, there's a lot of sour cream, like to an uncomfortable degree, like I went, like we pulled up to the hostess stand as she put a dollop in my cupped hands.
Or it's the normal amount of sour cream you might expect, or like, you know, just it's whatever amount of sour cream you ask for, but the only way they apply it to your burrito is by whipping a fistful of it through a fan.
So you have to stand at the end of the burrito line and just hold it up and hope?
Yeah.
Is your burrito assembled at that point, or is it still ingredients?
It's got to not be quite done yet.
I feel like there's some holes in the plan here.
I just like the idea of dropping a glob of sour cream into a spinning fan blade.
Yeah, I'd try that at least once. Mm-hmm.
And that's your game theme. No, I'm kidding.
So as you might expect, we're doing another segment, a theme ball in here, where each of us balls a theme to the other guy, and the other guy's got to come up with a game idea based on... Game idea, yeah, that's what I said. Based on that theme.
Yep.
So do you wanna ball your theme at me first, or should I ball a theme in your direction first? Oh, wait, do we have intro music for this?
Yeah.
Should we leave a space for that?
You just have to say, leave a little bit more space after you say theme ballin'.
Theme ballin'.
Yeah, like that.
Is that enough?
Yeah.
That'll be enough? That'll be plenty that we just left?
That's where we put it.
That's where we put it, just there.
Right there.
So really, for the readers, they just heard it, and then we started talking about putting it there, but it's really already there.
Why would the readers hear anything? Wouldn't the readers read?
You don't hear when you read?
Or the listeners hear?
Do you go deaf every time you crack a book? What is wrong with you?
You don't?
No.
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
Nothing. I'm practically perfect in every way, like Mary Poppins.
Practically perfect.
Right.
Which means you're not perfect.
No, it just means in all ways practical.
So in several philosophical ways, you are flawed.
Potentially.
It's sort of a quantum thing.
Yep. So your theme is dank memes.
Is it really?
Yes. You're welcome.
Dank memes, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one because memes develop can change quickly, so it's hard to, like, if you make a card game out of Pepe the Frog memes, like, that sucks. That's already boring, right?
Yeah.
Same thing, like, if you make a Harambe the gorilla.
Listen, you don't need to make a value judgment on what is or isn't dank. It can just be memes. It's just pitched better as dank memes.
Sure. But even so, like, if you pick any existing meme, it doesn't work as a game because it's already lame once you're making it into a card game or a game of any kind.
It's on you. Make it good.
Thanks, buddy. Dank memes. Good lord. It's tough because you don't want to actually be picking real memes because that doesn't, like, I'm tempted to try to do some sort of game where your goal is to get your meme to go viral, but I'm not trying to simulate that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to simulate the rancid, filthy hive mind of 4chan. Produce, you know, distributing memes.
Right.
And I'm not sure how to do it in a way that isn't immediately obsolete as the internet shifts and changes underneath you.
Well, I think you need to just be willing to accept that and maybe say, we will release meme booster packs as new memes appear. But because some memes have really, you know, stood the test of time. Like, Pepe the Frog has been around for a while.
It's true. I guess what I would do with that is I would try to make it a card game where your goal was to play memes that are just ahead of mainstream.
Uh-huh.
Like, you don't want to be too niche, because then you're not going to get retweeted or nobody's going to reply to your thread.
Uh-huh.
But you also don't want to be play... Like, once Facebook picks up your meme, that's too late. It's not worth anything.
Yeah.
So your goal, as you develop your memes, is to play memes just before they hit the mainstream. But other people are also playing them, which might playing at the same time, which might push your meme that you just played into the mainstream before it resolves. So I think I'd use like a first player mechanic.
Uh-huh.
And I'd also have simultaneous play of your meme for the turn that
okay.
you attempt to that you propagate. You know, you uh-huh. tweet it, you post it on message boards, whatever. And the first player's meme resolves first, and that shifts memes of that class closer to the mainstream by playing it.
Okay.
And you would have also modifier cards like that could push it quicker into the mainstream, like by posting it to Facebook or by creating a Facebook group by it or by having it by emailing it to CNN as the new thing that way that kids are telling each other to do drugs and showing their buttholes to each other. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And as it moves into mainstream, your cred as a meme maker for posting it becomes, you gain less, and eventually you start to actually lose cred. Because, like, if you're posting a Harambe the Gorilla meme now, you're not a cool meme guy. You're not a Fedora vape man anymore. You suck. So you've got to play your meme at the right moment. And you've got to gauge which memes other players are going to play. And what I would do is I think I would make like a grid with of 10 like meme phenotypes down the left.
Uh-huh.
Like gorilla, frog, hat, brisket, other unicycle, you know, that kind of thing. And like it's 8 meme meme themes across the top. And like they would be like mean-spirited, unkind, hurtful, that kind of thing.
They're all negative.
Yeah, it's memes. And then that combines into 100 or so different unique memes. And depending on how those different themes and meme phenotypes have reacted,
uh-huh.
have been played, those combine to show you how much you gain or lose in meme maker reputation.
Okay.
Your goal is to be the dankest guy on the meme board.
Okay. So it's almost kind of like you're predicting market forces, but for memes,
kind of, yeah.
So like,
yeah,
okay.
You're trying to play memes, because like you like let's take a unkind gorilla meme.
Uh-huh.
So it's a meme with a gorilla that shows
Side
up.
Side note:
all of it.
If there isn't a meme already called unkind gorilla,
it
that needs to be a thing.
Yeah. So you've got the meme has gorillas as the picture, and they're all saying mean stuff. Great.
Okay.
So if I suppose that nobody has played a single unkind gorilla meme so far. That's actually worth negative points to me, right? Because you don't, that's just dumb. I'm just posting a gorilla that says mean stuff. It's nothing yet.
There's got to be a way to model getting the meme off the ground. Someone
well, yeah,
creates
that's
every
it.
Meme.
You've got to take the hit to get that meme off the ground. Somebody's got to be the first mover and just have people laugh and mock their thread and their thread goes to oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
But then as the meme starts to get posted and it doesn't, and it stays on the underground, the 4chan type boards, it's worth 2 points, 10 points, 15, 20. And then it starts to hit its golden age where it's just in the cool people forums and it's worth a lot of points. But then very quickly after that, it starts to become worth little negative as it starts to go to Facebook and Twitter and appear on the nightly news.
So does the meme creator, though, get credit for their meme reaching Facebook and
who created Pepe the Frog? Nobody knows.
Okay.
Who created Harambe the Gorilla? Nobody knows who started that meme.
So
you get nothing for creating, but somebody has to create.
Well, then what's the point of ever creating a meme? Like you were saying, you have to take a hit to get your unkind gorilla meme off the ground. But if there's no benefit to you mm-hmm. of doing that, there's no point in ever taking a hit. Just play sure things.
Well, but there's not necessarily a sure thing at the start of the game. Maybe there are some memes that work, but eventually those sure things become useless. So if let's suppose that hostile Bobcat memes are great at the start of the game, right? Like whatever random tool you use to determine what memes are hot right at the beginning, hostile Bobcat is great. Well, if everybody jumps on hostile Bobcat, it's quickly going to become worth nothing. So you might get a little surge of popularity at the beginning, but then hostile Bobcat falls off, and now you've invested heavily in hostile Bobcat memes. It's not going to work. But if I, on the other hand, start a slow burn of judicious cassowaries, it's all animals.
Yeah,
really what
yeah.
we have going on here. And I take a couple of hits early, but then I'm able to quickly capitalize on it by playing a lot of judicious cassowaries at its peak.
Uh-huh.
I might come out ahead of your hostile Bobcat move.
I feel like somewhere along the line, the correlation to market forces is breaking your game.
Because mm-hmm.
I still don't see a reason to start.
Well, eventually...
So say the game starts as described with hostile Bobcat memes mm-hmm. being the one. Everyone should just play hostile Bobcat memes. There's no reason to play a judicious cassowary at a loss to yourself. Just wait until people drive hostile Bobcat into the ground mm-hmm. and then play judicious cassowary at a time when it isn't negative, it's just not as positive as you hope for it to be in the future.
Right. That's true. But the other problem you run into there is that if everybody's already worn out themselves out on hostile Bobcats,
uh-huh.
and you then try to start judicious cassowary, there's nothing to stop Gary from jumping on your judicious cassowary bandwagon and stealing your thunder. So you need to. There needs to be a mechanic. I mean,
there's never anything to stop him from doing that because right. so far you've never rewarded a person starting it. So there's no compelling reason to start one, regardless of whether or not anyone else.
So,
in fact, you need Gary to jump on your bandwagon, or your judicious cassowary meme is never going to get popular.
That's true. So you need to time the starting of your judicious cassowary meme where you can start it, other people can make it popular, and then you can swoop in and scoop those big meme points when it's at the peak of its popularity. Whereas, or you might try a different strategy and just try to wait for the big meme points at the peak of its popularity and make a grab for it.
Okay, I think the game needs something because it doesn't work as pure math. I think it needs an element of like apples to apples. What's the one that basically gets turned into memes anyway?
Oh, Cards Against Humanity.
Cards Against Humanity.
So you're saying an element of the players sort of voting on which memes are most popular?
Yeah, so you can keep your market forces. So, you know, it could be some combination of player votes and the actual value of the meme.
Mm-hmm.
But you could choose or have some combination of scoring mechanisms or something where it's like, okay, if you have a high value meme... I guess that's a little harder to do since the values have to be artificial. But if you have a high value meme and you get a lot of votes for it, maybe mm-hmm. that's not actually worth as much as if you managed to get a lot of votes for a low value meme, was my initial thought.
Mm-hmm.
But since the values aren't actually necessarily set by the preferences of the players, that doesn't really need to work that
right.
way. But still, I think something other than just trying to play the math of it needs to be in there.
Yeah, it needs a little chaos to it, because it's memes. Memes are chaos.
Memes.
That...
Well, I gotta hand it to you. You took a really, really garbage theme that I threw at you, and you made something that probably also isn't good, but at least wasn't as terrible as it could have been out of it.
Thanks, buddy.
I'm here for you.
I don't think I would play Dank Memes the game.
I wouldn't. I would mock it mercilessly if I saw it on the shelf at Walmart.
I don't think it would be sold at Walmart.
I think that's the only sort of place that sort of game would be made, because no small publisher could ever get that published.
Mm-hmm.
It would either be a failed Kickstarter, or it would be something that like Parker Brothers did because it's run by old guys who don't understand the youth.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, you know what the kids like these days?
Memes. Pepe the Frog.
Yeah.
Good times.
If that were the way it happened, it would probably be just now they're getting to making like a cheeseburger cat.
Oh, yeah, that's game. Fair. I can has cheeseburger.
I like that sort of thing mostly because I really enjoy finding them at garage sales a decade and a half later and being like, oh my God, someone made this. I had completely forgotten about Cheeseburger Cat.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when there was an entire cheeseburger network? Many different sites.
Isn't there still an ICanHasCheeseburger.com?
I don't know. I assumed it was dead and gone.
Was that... Did that guy, the ICanHasCheeseburger guy, also make KnowYourMeme.com?
That I don't know.
I thought it was the same guy.
It's now ICanHas.Cheeseburger.com.
Hmm.
And it is pretty similar to how it was before. ICanHas, FailBlog, MemeBase, Geek Universe, The Daily What. There's still somewhat of a cheeseburger network, even. That's surprising to me. Well, you gonna
ball you a theme?
Or theme me a ball? Or
your theme that I'm going to ball over to you is basketball great and roundabout of rebound Charles Barkley. No, that's a lie.
Good, because I don't think I could do anything with that.
Your theme that I'm balling over to you is deep sea fishing.
Okay.
Yeah, can you work with that?
Is this like deadliest catch deep sea fishing?
Whatever. It could be Ernest Hemingway style deep sea fishing.
Are they different? I don't know anything about Ernest Hemingway style deep sea fishing.
Do you know anything about the deadliest catch style deep sea fishing?
No, but I feel like that's easy enough to make a game out of.
Ernest Hemingway style deep sea fishing would be you're fishing for marlin off of Cuba and also you're really, really drunk.
Is there a chance you might die?
Yeah. Most things, generally.
All right.
You might also, in certain circumstances, be hunting Nazi submarines.
While deep sea fishing?
Yes.
Okay, see...
That's a 100% true story, by the way.
That's more interesting than the deadliest catch. To me.
Alcoholic writers hunting Nazi submarines off of Cuba while fishing?
Yeah.
With their buddies?
Like, why not?
It's a thing that happened.
But I don't know enough about it to make that happen.
Do you want a different theme?
Like, what did they use? I'm just thinking.
They had, like, shotguns and...
No, but, like, to hunt it. I guess... When was this?
The 40s. It was during World War II.
Okay.
He outfitted his boat, the Pilar, to hunt submarines.
Did he have, like a sonar thing?
He had, I think he had a fish finder.
Okay.
Type deal.
Like, how far does that go?
Not very. So, it wasn't a great plan. He had a...
Was he successful?
No, he was not. He never found a submarine. He had a... I think they had a, what do you call it?
I think you mean the stocks or a pillory?
fire extinguisher that they'd rigged up as an explosive. And their plan was if they encountered a surfaced German submarine, they were going to ram the conning tower and then wait for a German officer to poke his head out the tower.
The top there, yeah.
Yeah, and then they were going to shoot him with their guns and then throw the exploding fire extinguisher down in there.
It's not a good plan.
It's not the best plan ever. But it's a plan that they had.
That they had.
Yeah, I read an entire book about it. It was great. But anyway, you could just go with regular deep sea fishing, whichever works. We could talk about Ernest Hemingway all night if we wanted to.
Let's not. I mean, I guess it could be as simple as area control. You know, you have a map of the world, I guess. Or the sea in a more specific area. Really, it could just be the world. That's easy enough.
Mm-hmm.
And fishing is good in some areas and not so much in other areas. And you just have to maintain control of those areas and fish good. And then some sort of spinner or die roll or whatever will change to some degree the availability of fish in those locations. That would be a deeply boring game that I would never play.
And so then you have to move to a different the locations where the fish are biting.
Yeah, and just keep other people from being there with their fish boats, because then they would get those fish instead of you getting them. But that's not a good game.
No. It doesn't sound intriguing at all.
Nope, not even a little bit.
Could we get an element of, like, telling a big fish story into it where... bragging about the size of the... where bragging and exaggerating the size of the fish that you caught... is part of the mechanic? Like a boast your fish as big as you can without going over type deal?
I think that's been done.
Oh.
It could be a...
I don't know. I thought it was a good idea.
Well, it was a bad idea. I don't know. Or it was a good idea enough that someone did it already. Whatever, man.
Listen, I'm trying to help you here.
It could be a man your deep sea fishing boat and each... player is a member of the crew, and then you could just model it after, you know, the Deadliest Catch or the Perfect Storm or whatever you want to do, but actually have to pilot a boat around and ride a bike around and look at some titties.
You can't say look at some titties out there. This is a family show.
Okay.
What if you weren't fishing for marlin or like regular fish, but were fishing for like Leviathan?
Yeah. So it could just be like Arkham Horror on a boat.
Sure.
I'm just saying.
Okay, podcast over.
I don't know. I'm struggling for anything to do with this that with as little knowledge of, as I have of the subject to make it interesting at all. Like, I'm intrigued a little bit by the concept of the cooperatively manned deep sea fishing boat, but I feel like that, first of all, those games are so hard to make work,
mm-hmm.
because you need such a specific number of players, and the different roles you can take on are not equal to one another in any way. And so even if you manage to get seven guys together to play deep sea fishing, the board game, the guy who's stuck on like helm duty,
mm-hmm.
is just like, I guess I'll move the piece when it's time to move the piece that represents the boat.
I wish cool. I got to fish.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking kind of like, I'm thinking of it kind of like the, what's the submarine game you're all horned up about that's just Artemis as a board game?
Oh, Captain Sonar.
Yeah, it's that, which is an interesting enough concept, but A, has been done as Captain Sonar, and B, needs such a specific number of people to even begin to be playable
mm-hmm.
that we'll probably never play it. It sounds cool, but we don't even know enough people who like board games.
Listen, we're going to play it. Just let me have this.
Like, I'll play it with you, and it'll be two of us each trying to take on five different roles or whatever, and that'll be fine, but it won't be the game of working together as a team to do the thing.
Listen, it's going to be okay. What if, and hear me out now, for the deep sea fishing game, what if you are the fish?
I was just going to say that.
Oh.
It's not really a deep sea fishing game, though, then. It's a deep sea fish game.
Is it good?
No.
Well, this has been a disappointment.
It's probably my fault. I mean, it was my job to come up with the thing. Just because your theme was garbage doesn't mean I shouldn't have been able to make something work.
I like how you managed to take responsibility, but also throw a little bit of shade.
Yeah. I mean, just because you're a bad person doesn't mean I shouldn't be able to work around your failings for the sake of everyone else.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, I
appreciate it. We have fun here, though, on this show.
Do you have any ideas for a deep sea fishing game?
No, I was hoping you did.
Oh, sorry.
You could do a game where each player's is controlling a rival deep sea fishing business, and there's not enough deep sea fishermen to go around.
Oh, so now instead of fighting for fish or area, you're fighting for crew.
You're fighting for crew, but you're also fighting for area, because when you send your fishermen, your fishing boat out, like, you and I can't go to the same spot to fish. That's not going to work.
Right, that's the game I described initially as deeply boring.
Oh.
Area control.
Yeah.
But for fishing.
Well, but we're also fighting for the fishermen.
That doesn't make it more interesting. That just adds another boring aspect to a boring game.
Well, but there's also Cthulhu.
Okay.
Out there. And you've got to watch out for it, because some of the fishermen are cultists. There. Does that make you happy? It's Arkham Horror on the water.
We already talked about that.
But it makes you happy, doesn't it?
It's okay.
Your nipples are erect, aren't
they? You're the one who's into boats.
I do like boats.
And now both of our nipples are erect. You can't say nipples are erect. This is a family podcast.
We're nipple fencing over the table right now.
Gross.
Ting 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 ting. It's the sound that nipples make when they bang against one another.
If you would like to see a video of us nipple fencing, you should PayPal $1 million to mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com, because they can't PayPal things to Twitter
or to Twitter at mildlyalarming.
Yep. Or you could put a thing in the website asking us how else to give us money on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on Facebook. Facebook. This is a disaster. Facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. Also, please rate and review us as great. If you have bad things to say, just don't bother. Just give us 5 stars and say them somewhere else on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or TuneIn Radio.
Or apply ice to your nipples until they're rock hard and then use them to tunnel through the Earth's crust to its core, because that's where we are. That's where we broadcast from, right down there. And then we'll let you in and we'll give you some paella.
I didn't know we had paella.
I was going to tell you after the show.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back next week, but for now we're going to go eat paella.
Paella.
The paellaist.
It's paella-ish.
Okay, we're done. Bye. The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by Lobster Mobster, the gritty new crime drama on BAPS. Last season saw Lobster Mobster rise to control of the block, but at what cost?
You said you were going to get out of the game, Lobster Mobster. I don't even know who you are anymore. You boiled that guy, Lobster Mobster. You boiled him in a huge pot of water. Oh, I can't live this life, Lobster Mobster. I'm just a regular girl from the cornfields of northeastern Iowa. I'm going home, Lobsty. I'm sorry.
Can Lobster Mobster win back Nadine while snipping his way to the top of the Crustacea Nostra? Or will Fatty F***ing Crab win the day? Find out on the new season of Lobster Mobster, Threadless Days on BAPS. Bigger. Better. BAPS.